want to spend probably most of the class, if not all of it, on the brachos that Yaakov gave the Shvatim. Not the specific brachos, but the whole general idea. We'll start with a few questions, and eventually we'll get to some answers, I hope. Chazal say that when Yaakov called in the Shvatim, Heosfu v'agido lochem eisa asher yikro eschem ba'achris hayomim bikesh Yaakov legalos esakeitz. Yaakov Avinu wanted to reveal to them the Kates, according to many Rishonim, that means when Mashiach would come. The final deadline Kates. And something happened, and that was hidden from him, and he lost that information, and he began, Rashi says, to say other things. He gave them brachas instead. Very strange. If I had come here tonight and lost my notes and forgot completely what I wanted to tell you, what I had prepared, I wouldn't sit here and start saying something else. I would beg you to give me some time to prepare, right? I'd have to prepare something else if I didn't prepare that. Or I'd just tell you, well, we'll come back next week. But I wouldn't all of a sudden start saying something else. Yaakov Avinu had planned to tell them the Kates. And he forgot it. All of a sudden he starts giving them brachas. Secondly, that's what the Torah calls them. V'zos asher diber lohem avihem v'yivorechosam ish asher kibirchaso beirachosam. Everybody got their bracha. Is that really true? What was Reuven's bracha? Reuven, you could have been the Kohen, the Melech, and the Bechor. Tough luck, you lost them all. Great bracha. I would have stayed home for that one. Shimon and Levi, Or Apam Kios. Shimon and Levi get their anger cursed. So out of 12, the first three don't seem to have any bracha. That's a quarter. And the other ones, you're like a snake, you're like a donkey, right? Very nice with the zoo, but what does that do with brachas? Then there's a medrash. The medrash says that when Yaakov called his children together, he looked at their names, and he saw that two letters don't appear in the names of any of the Shvatim, and that's Ches and Tes, Chet. So Yaakov said, wow, there's no Chet in the names of my children. I can tell them when Mashiach's coming. And then he looked again, the Medrash says, and he saw there's two other letters that don't appear in the names of any of the Shvatim. Kuf and Tzadik, the Kates. So he said, well, there's no Chet, but there's also no Kates. So I can't tell them the Kates. Now, I understand what it means that there's no Chet in the names of the Shvatim. That hints to the fact that they basically are potentially perfect. But there's no Kates. Mashiach isn't hinted to in the names. Mashiach's not going to come. What does that have to do with not being hinted in the names of the Shvatim? No Kates. What does it mean? Another Medrash. The Medrash says that when Yaakov called his children in, what can he be compared to? To the following. There was a confidant of the king, king's friend who was dying. And he called his children in, and he wanted to reveal to them the mysteries that the king confided in him. And he's just ready to tell them the mysteries, and he sees that the king is standing there by his bed together with his children. So he hurriedly tells them, instead of the mysteries, Hizaru b'kvodo shel melech. Be careful of the honor of the king. So too, Yaakov Avinu wanted to tell his children the mysteries of the king, when Mashiach was going to come. And he sees that the Shechinah is standing there by his bed together with his children. The Rabbanu Shlom is also there. So instead of telling them the mysteries, he gives them brachas. Now, Chazal could have made the mashal any way they wanted to fit the nimshal. So why didn't they? What should the mashal have been? The confidant of the king wants to reveal the mysteries of the king. That is parallel to Yaakov wanting to reveal when Mashiach would come, which is the mysteries of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He sees that the king is standing there with his children. Yaakov sees the Shechina is there together with his children. And therefore, instead of revealing the mysteries, he gives them blessings. That's what he should have said. Why did they introduce in the marshal something that has nothing to do with the nimshal? The fact that the friend said, be careful of the honor of the king, has no parallel in what actually happened. What actually happened is Yaakov gave them brachas. Where's this to be careful of the honor of the king? One more question and then we'll start giving some answers. All of the Sfarim of the Chumash have two names. There is the name that's taken from the first or second word of the Sefer, Bereishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim. And then there's the thematic name of the Sefer, that Chazal gave each Sefer a name that represents the theme of the Sefer. Sefer Bereishis is called Sefer HaYitzira. Sefer Shmos is called Sefer HaGeula. Vayikra is called Toras Kohanim. Bamidbar is Chumash HaPikudim. And Devarim is Mishneh Torah. Now, if you think that you never heard those names before, you have heard them. But you heard them in Greek. You're very familiar with them. Because Sefer HaYitzira is Genesis. And Sefer HaGeula is Exodus. And Toras Kohanim is Leviticus. Leviticus means the laws of the Levim, the laws of the Kohanim, Toras Kohanim. And Numbers is Chumash HaPikudim. If you ever wondered why they translate Bamidbar, which is desert, as Numbers, because it's not going on Bamidbar. It's going on the thematic name of Chumash HaPikudim, the Chumash of the numbering. They went into the desert and were numbered, and they came out of the desert, were numbered. And this Chumash is between the two sensi, between the census at the beginning and the census at the end, in Parshas Pinchas. So it's safer, Bamidbar is safer, Chumash HaPikudim, numbers. And Deuteronomy means the review of the law, Mishneh Torah. The Greeks took the thematic names that Chazal gave the Sfarim and they translated them to Greek. Now, if you think about it, the names that we normally use and the thematic names parallel each other. Sefer Bereishis in the beginning fits very nice with Sefer HaYetzira. They have the same idea. Vayikra, God called to Moshe from Ohel Moed to tell him what? Toras Kohanim. The laws of the Kohanim. Everything that happened in the Midbar happened between the census at the beginning and the census at the end. So Chumash HaPikudim and Bamidbar go together. Eila HaDvarim Asher Diber Moshe, what did he say? Deuteronomy, Mishneh Torah. There's only one, obviously, that doesn't fit. Sefer Shmos, names, and Sefer HaGeula, the book of Geula. What in the world do names have to do with Geula? What's the connection? All the other ones, the theme and the name of the Sefer fit each other, except for Shmos. There's another Medrash. The Medrash says, Bizchus ve'ela Shmos b'nei Yisrael, miskaimim ve'ela toldo shamayim v'aretz. In the schus of the names of Klal Yisrael, the world exists. Now, what does that mean? I can understand it exists in the schus of Klal Yisrael, but it's schus of the names of Klal Yisrael. In addition, in this week's Sedra already, and next week's Sedra, we have the Eila Shmos B'nei Yisrael. And Rashi, in next week's Sedra, right away in the beginning, comments that Klal Yisrael are as dear and precious as the stars. just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu counts every star and calls it by name, so too every Jew is counted and called by name, both when they were alive in this week's Sedra and after death in next week's Sedra. Now what in the world does that mean, that we're so precious that God counts us and calls us by name? What makes us precious about the fact that God calls every star by a name, and that makes them very precious? Why? Does he have a name? So let's start understanding what that means. The idea of a name in Lashon HaKodesh is not just an arbitrary thing. It says that Adam HaRishon had tremendous chachma because he named everything in creation. If a name is merely an arbitrary thing, then what chachma does it take to pick out names for everything? But the name of something in Lashon HaKodesh represents its essence. It represents its abilities, capabilities, talents, qualities. What that thing is in its essence is what its name represents. And therefore, Adam HaRishon saw the essence of everything and named it according to that. And it's not just a simple meaning of the name. For instance, a kelev, Chazal say, is called a kelev she'ein lo ela lev echad l'ba'alav. It's a very loyal pet. It has one heart for its owner. Kelev, like a heart. Now that's a very small, shallow idea. But the word kelev and the gematria of the word kelev and the way the letters are shaped, beyond me, but every single aspect of that name, of those letters, are the root of the neshama of that thing. That's what that thing is in essence. If you study the name, you'll be able to understand the essence of that thing. Everybody has four names, Chazal say. And therefore, we're not just talking about the name you happen to be called. But your name means what your essence is. And in that respect, Chazal say, everybody has four names. The name HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you, the name your parents give you, the name your friends give you, and the main name is the one that you make for yourself. Based on this concept of what names are, I want to explain it in the following way. Every person has abilities, capabilities, talents, qualities that make them special. Where did those abilities, capabilities, and talents come from? Some of them are part of your original essence. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created our neshamas, he made each neshama different to fit its tafkid, its purpose in this world. And everybody is outfitted with the qualities that it needs to be able to fulfill its purpose. That's the name that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you. The qualities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us at creation that make our neshama different than everybody else's neshama. Some qualities, though, are not part of the essence of your neshama, but they are transmitted by heredity. You have certain qualities, abilities, capabilities, talents that you get from your parents. That's called heredity. That's the name your parents give you. There's certain qualities that you get from the environment around you, that you learn from others. That's the name your friends give you. All of those are potential. Potential is like a big zero. If you have a lot of potential, you have a lot of zeros. If you put something in front of those zeros, it becomes a very big number. If you put nothing in front of it, it remains zero. The main name is what you take from all that potential and make for yourself. So those are the four names that a person has. Talents, abilities, capabilities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you directly. The ones that come from your parents from heredity. The ones you learn from the environment around you, and the one that you take that potential and actualize it for yourself. If that's the idea of a name, So you can understand that the following pasuk. Torah says, Re'ei Karasi B'Shem Bitzalel Ben Uri Ben Hur. The Sfarno says, whenever it says Re'ei, and it can't mean to look with your physical eye, it's not talking about something that's visible physically, then Re'ei means to contemplate, to think, to ponder. Re'ei Karasi B'Shem Bitzalel. Think, ponder. Think deeply into the fact that I call the name of Bezalel. Now, on the surface, you can think about that for about a second. Okay, God called the name Bezalel. What more is there to think about? But if the idea of the name is the talents, abilities, capabilities, then I think it teaches us two things to think about. Bezalel was a very talented young man. He was an architect, a builder, a jeweler, a Kabbalist, a tremendous Talmud Chacham. He knew how to put together the letters with which God created the world. He had tremendous, tremendous Chachma, both secular wisdom and Torah wisdom. Where did he get it from? He went to college, took a correspondence course. He was an Eved his entire life in Mitzrayim. Obviously, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him that wisdom. It was a present. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him those talents. That's the first thing. Every single one of us, maybe not to the extent that Bezalel had, but every one of us have talents, abilities, and capabilities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. That's the first thing to think about. Second thing, why do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Bezalel all these tremendous talents? So he could build shopping centers, he could build townhouses, maybe, I don't know what he did in his spare time. But it's obvious that the main reason why Bezalel was given these talents was because somebody had to build the Mishkan, and the Ribbono Shel Olam gave Bezalel the potential to be able to be the one to build the Mishkan. Second thing to learn from Bezalel: we are all blessed with talents, abilities, capabilities. Everybody unique. And the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us is to use it in His service. For the sake of the Torah, for the sake of Klal Yisrael, for the sake of the Ribbono Shel Olam, predominantly. You want to use it for other things too? Sunter Hay. But the main reason it was given is to somehow use it in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's what we learn from Bezalel. Bezalel was given tremendous talent, and he was obviously given to use to build the Mishkan. Every star has a name. What does that mean? I was in the States many times this time of year, and I heard on the radio over the years the following commercial, and the only change was that the price went up year by year. It started about $25 and went up to about $75. They said the following. In America, there's a problem, or there used to be a problem, it may not be of anymore, but it used to be a problem that during this season of gift giving by the Goyim, there are people who have everything. So what do you give them? What do you give a person who has everything? So this commercial said the following. We suggest that you send $25 to the following address, and we will name a star for the person that you want to give the gift. We will send him a certificate with the coordinates of the star and attest to the fact that this star is named for him, and we will register his star and its name in the star registry. All for, years ago, $25. Last year it was up to $75. People must be doing this because they wouldn't have paid for radio advertising if nobody sent in money. So there must have been a lot of crazy people out there that didn't realize that there is no such thing as a star registry. Oh, there is. You can make your own star registry too. Just take out a little notebook, write on it, star registry. Then go outside when it clears up, and for free, you can name every star out there for yourself and write it down in your star registry. And it will be as official as what they do. And you can even write yourself a certificate, right? Certifying that you named your star. It's true. Your star in the star registry is called that name, except the star registry has absolutely no validity to anything except to those people who are making $75 on every idiot who sends in $75 to have their name in the star registry. That's what it means. God calls stars by names. He doesn't even charge $25. That's what it means. Every star has a name. What it means is every star is unique. The spectrum of every star, what it contains, what kind of gases are there, what elements are there, and what place it plays in creation, which is way beyond us, both physically and spiritually, why every single star is necessary to balance out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to accomplish with this universe. And any star that would be missing, something would be missing in the perfection of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to create. Every star has a name, means every star has a essence that is unique, that its abilities, purpose, talents, capabilities is unique to it. And God therefore counts everyone. Everyone's important. Everyone's unique and everyone has a name. So too Klal Yisrael. Every Jew has abilities, capabilities, and talents. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu considers each and every one of us important because in order for Klal Yisrael to be complete, every single one of us needs to be there. In order for the world to be complete, every human being has a purpose. And if one is missing, then something is missing in the perfection of the world. That is what it means that every person like a star has the name, and that's what makes us precious. How important is it that a person brings out that potential that he has? So I don't remember if we spoke about this in Parshas Vayetze or not, but I'm going to repeat it probably anyway, unless you really remember it. Remember a Gemara that we spoke about, that before a person dies, his neshama gives a scream that's heard, Misofa olam v'ad sofa? No. Okay. So whether I said it, I can't remember, and if I can't remember, you surely can't remember, so it doesn't make any difference. We'll say it again. The Gemara says that before a person dies, his neshama gives a scream that's heard from one end of the world to the other, Misofa olam v'ad sofa. Reb Chaim Volozhiner explains what is so traumatic that the neshama screams such a scream right before he leaves this world. And he says the following. He says right before a person dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him a split screen. On one side of the screen, he shows him what he could have been had he developed all his potential. On the other side of the screen, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him what he actually was. And when the neshama sees the gulf between what it could have been and what it actually was, it gives a scream that goes, Misofa olam v'ad sofa. I want to add something to that, because the language is a little difficult. It should have said the scream goes, Mirosha olam v'ad sofa, from the beginning to the end. What's Misofa olam v'ad sofa, from the end to the end? I want to explain it in the following way. There is an argument in the Gemara in Megillah what the pasuk in Megillas Esther means when it says Hamolech mehodu v'ad kush. Achashverosh ruled from Hodu to Kush. Where exactly were Hodu and Kush? So one opinion says that Hodu was at one end of the world and Kush was at the other end of the world, and Achashverosh ruled mehodu v'ad kush from one end of the world to the other. And the other opinion says no. Hodu and Kush were right next to each other. And just like Achashverosh ruled over Hodu and Kush, which were right under his thumb, he ruled over the whole world. Says the Vilna Gaon, how could you have an argument in a Beis Medrash where Hodu and Kush are? take a boat, get a map, find out where they are. It's like sitting here and we'll discuss where New York and Los Angeles are. Are they right next to each other or at opposite ends of the United States? And we'll sit here and discuss it and argue about it. Go get a map and find out. Take a trip, right? Go to New York, start walking and see if you get to Los Angeles right away. What's there to argue about? It's a fact. Secondly, we know that whenever Chazal argue, Eilu ve'Eilu divrei Elokim chayim, they're both right. How can they both be right? Either Hodu and Kush are opposite ends of the world, so they're right next to each other. Says the Vilna Gaon, no. Any two points on a globe are at the same time right next to each other and at opposite ends of the world. This building and the building across are right next to each other if you go this way. But if you go that way, you're not going to get to that building till you go around the world. So if you look that way, that building is at the opposite end of the world. If you look this way, it's right next to each other. There's no argument about fact. The argument is perspective. Hodu and Kush were at the same time right next to each other if you went from Hodu to Kush. But if you went away from Hodu, you're not going to get to Kush till you go around the world. The question is, what does the Megillah want to portray? The quantity of Achashverosh's rule around the world, or the quality, both of them right next to each other under his thumb? If that's the case, then we can use the following from that idea. Take a point in the world. It's a point on a globe. Or even more than that, space is supposed to be curved also. So it's like a big sphere. Take a point. Any point, if you look at it just as an end point in itself, is a little point. But if you divide that point into a beginning and an end, and you go away from the point, you're not going to come back to the end of that point until you go around the whole world. So that point encompasses an entire world. If you look at it as a beginning and an end. If you look at it only as an end point, it's only a little point. That's what the Neshama screams. Every person has points of potential. If you look at them as an end in themselves and never develop them, they're nothing. But if you look at them as a beginning and an end, then every point of potential encompasses an entire world. The Neshama gives a scream that goes from the end of the world to the end, because it never looked at the potential, those points of potential, as anything more than an end, not a beginning and an end, and therefore lost worlds of potential and remained with just little dots. So that's how important it is that a person develop their potential and use their name. Develop their name. In addition, I think this we may have mentioned way back in the beginning of the year, but I'm going to mention it again. At Ni'il on Yom Kippur, we don't say the long vidui of Al-Chait. There's one vidui that we say in the three paragraphs that are substituted for that. L'man nechtal me'oshek yodenu, in order that we should stop stealing. It's the only sin that we confess at Ni'ila. Besides the Oshamnu. But the specific sins, we only say, L'man nechtal me'oshik yodenu. Says the Chedush Arim, that's the one sin that every Jew, man, woman, and child, every year at Ne'ilan Yom Kippur, has to confess that we're a bunch of ganovim. That's the Jewish people. All of us are a bunch of ganovim. L'man nechtal me'oshik yodenu. So before I tell you what he says, I'll give you a marshal to what he says. It's customary in secular high schools that they send scouts to the senior classes to scout out talented young people for instance, let's say an engineering firm sends scouts to the senior class. They're looking for a young man or young woman who is talented in two areas. They are artistically inclined and they're good in math. Somebody who excels in both of those areas would make a great engineer. So they find a young lady who's talented in both of those areas. She scored top grades on all her math, college boards or whatever, and she is very artistically inclined. They go to her and they say the following. We think that if you take engineering in college, you would be a great engineer. We have an engineering firm. We're looking for nice, young, talented people to join our firm. We would like to pay for your college education, give you room and board and spending money, with one condition, that you take engineering, that when you get your degree and you become an engineer, you come to work for our firm for a minimum of 5 years. That's the deal. What could be better? Entire education paid for with a guaranteed job. She signs on the dotted line. She goes through college. Shitaka becomes an engineer. She comes to work for the firm. But instead of doing anything constructive, the entire day, day in and day out, week in and week out, she plays computer games. That's it. What sin is she guilty of? Don't tell me playing computer games, not one of the Taryag. Which game is she, what sin is she guilty of? Gezel. She's a ganav. They invested in her tremendous amounts of money to see a return on their investment. And she's not giving them a return on their investment. She's a ganav. So too, says the Chiddush Arim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu invested in us a lot of talents, abilities, capabilities, a body, a neshama, material possessions, big investment. And all he wants to see is a return on his investment. He just wants to see that we use those things in his service. And we come to Ilan Yom Kippur, and we look back over the year, and we see that a good portion of the time, not only aren't we using what God invested in us in his service, we're not giving him a return on his investment, we use it for the competition. We're a bunch of ganavim. So we tell the Rabbanu Shalom, "Manechta me'oshik yodeinu." This year we're going to stop stealing. This year we'll start giving you a return on your investment. So that's how important it is that a person uses his name, his abilities, capabilities, and talents in service of the Rabbanu Shalom. There's a medrash that says that the Geula is hinted to in the names of the Shvatim. Now you can understand what that means. The names of the Shvatim represent their abilities, capabilities, and talents. Their qualities. What is Geula? Geula is redemption. That's redemption. There's a lot of things in this world that are there potentially, but they're not redeemed. They're not brought and actualized. When the potential of the world is actualized, that'll be Geula. Everybody brings out their potential perfection as much as possible, and then the world will be brought to perfection. When all Yidden bring out their perfection, then the world will reach perfection. That's Geula. That is what Geula is. Geula is when the world will reach perfection. How does the world reach perfection? By all the individuals in the world reaching perfection. To illustrate that, tell you a story. This is not a chazal, just a story. There was a man reading a magazine, and his little 5-year-old was bothering him incessantly, and he couldn't make any headway in the magazine. So he noticed that one of the pages of the magazine was a map of the world. So he tore out the page, tore it into 20 little pieces, called in his little daughter, and he said, "This is a map of the world. It's a puzzle. Go back, put it together, and don't come back to me until you finish." Now he knew, she's only 5 years old. She doesn't know what the map of the world looks like. So there's no way she could put it together except by matching the contours of the tears. It's going to take her hours to do. So he has a little peace and quiet for a few hours till she comes back. 15 minutes later, the girl comes back, "I finished." He said, "It's impossible. There's no way you could have put that picture together unless you knew what it looked like. And you don't know what the world looks like. You would have had to match the contours of the tears. You couldn't have done it. It's impossible." She said, "Come and look." And sure enough, on the glass top of a coffee table, the map is reconstructed 100% perfect. The guy looks at his daughter. He says, "You're a genius. I didn't know. You're 5 years old. You must have known what the world looks like in order to do it so quickly." She said, "No, it was real easy." You see, on the other side of the paper, there was a picture of a person. I just put the person together and the whole world fell into place. If you put the person together and you bring each person to perfection, the world will also fall into place and become a perfect place. That is Geula. There are two ways that the Geula can come. One is called Be'ita and the other is called Achishena. The Geula can come in a set time that God set when He created the world, that beyond that, Mashiach won't tarry. And whether we deserve it, we don't deserve it, we're ready, we're not ready, God will make it that we are ready and bring Mashiach. That's the deadline. That's called the Kates, the end, the deadline. But Mashiach can come sooner than that if we deserve it. If we bring ourselves to perfection earlier, we can bring the world to perfection earlier. That's called Achishena. Now let's go back to the Medrashim and see what they mean. Yaakov Avinu calls his children in and he wants to reveal to them the Kates, when the deadline for Mashiach is. And he looks at their names and he sees that in the names of the Shvatim, meaning their abilities, capabilities, and talents, what their potential is, there is no Chet. There's nothing missing. Chet is Chesaron, meaning they are potentially have the potential for perfection. If that's the case, he looks again and he sees there's two other letters that don't appear in the names of the Shvatim. Kates. Why? Because if they bring themselves to perfection, they'll never have to get to the Kates. They'll never have to wait till the deadline. Mashiach will come way before that deadline. So it's not there's something wrong with the Kates not being in their names. It's the exact same thing as Chet not being in their names. Since there is no Chesaron, there's nothing missing, there's no imperfection in the potential they have, they can reach perfection and bring Mashiach way before the Kates. So in the names of the Shvatim, there is no Kates. In their names, there's only bringing Mashiach earlier, not waiting till the Kates. And therefore, Yaakov says, instead of telling them the deadline, I have something better to tell them. I'll tell them how they could bring Mashiach sooner. And that is the marshal of the king's confidant. The king's friend is dying. And he wants to tell his children the mysteries the king confided him. Now I would imagine if he's a good friend of the king, he doesn't want to say something behind the back of the king that he knows the king doesn't want him to say. And therefore the marshal can't be that when he sees the king standing there, he's embarrassed because, oh, I wanted to say something. I don't want the king to hear this. Because what kind of friend is that of the king if you say something behind his back to your children that he doesn't want you to say? So that can't be the reason he doesn't want to say it. It must be that the king is fine with him telling over these mysteries. These are things that the king wouldn't mind him confiding in his children. So then why doesn't he want to say it? Because he makes the following, he reasons the following. I could tell my children the mysteries that the king confided in me. And they'll hear it secondhand from me. But the king is right here with them. I have something better to tell them. I'll tell them how they can become friends of the king and hear it directly from him. If you'll be careful of the honor of the king, then you'll become his friend like I was. And he'll tell it to you directly. Isn't it better to hear from him than to hear from me secondhand? That's what he says. I'll tell you something better than tell you the mysteries. I'll tell you how you can hear those mysteries yourself directly from the king. That's what Yaakov said. I have something better to tell you than when the deadline for Mashiach is going to come. I'll tell you how you can make God bring it earlier. What's that? I'll give you brachas. What are these brachas? Says in Pirkei Avos, Chaviv ha'adam shenivra b'tzelem elokim. Man is precious because he was created in God's image. Chiba yisera nodas lo. Shenivra b'tzelem. It's an extra precious since that we were told we were created b'tzelem elokim. You can have tremendous talents, abilities, capabilities, but if you don't know about it, it's worthless. The biggest bracha you can give somebody, your child, your student, is to let them know what capabilities they have, what talents they have, what they're capable of doing. Self-knowledge, that's the biggest brach. And part of that is to let them know what they can't do. That's also a brach. Give me an example. Imagine somebody who has the worst singing voice you can imagine. Okay? When he sings, it sounds like you're rubbing your nails on a chalkboard. That's how bad it is. And you see that person going to the library one day and taking out a stack of books on how to be a chazan. Wouldn't it be a bracha to go over to him and say, unless you plan to be a chazan in an institution for the deaf, it is not for you. Because you'll open your mouth the first time and you won't have a minion. People will run away in fright. Right? You are not cut out to be a chazan. You don't have what it takes. So why don't you become an author, something else, but not a chazan? It's a bracha. Instead of letting the person waste hours, maybe years, of something that's just not him. He doesn't have that talent. He has other talents. That was the brachas that Yaakov gave. Each child, he told them what their potential was, what their talents, abilities, capabilities. You're like a snake and you're like this. And each one had different qualities. But he also told the ones who weren't capable of doing what they thought they could do, Reuven, you could have been a king, a bechor, and a kohen. You lost that. Don't waste your time on those things. But you're still Reuven. You have what you can develop. Don't waste your time on being a kohen, a bechor, or a melech. It's not for you. That's a bracha. Shimon and Levi, you have a problem with your anger. I'll help you control it. That's a bracha. The biggest bracha is to let people know what they can do and what they can't do. And if they need help in being able to control those midos, to give them help. That's the bracha that Yaakov Avinu gave. Instead of telling them when the deadline for Mashiach was, he told them something much more valuable, how they could bring that deadline closer. That was the bracha. And that's what it says, that when Yaakov called them in and he saw that for some reason he couldn't tell them the deadline, he thought it's because something was wrong with them. Not because of what we said. Because something's right about them. So he said to them, maybe there's something wrong with you, and that's why God is preventing me from telling you the deadline. And they said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. To which Yaakov answered, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchus Ol Yolam Vo'ed. Meaning that no, we have that unity, that Hashem Elokeinu, the oneness of Hashem will come through us. And each one of us has those potential to bring that day in the future that will be one and unite everything in creation to perfection. And Yaakov said, you know what? Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Le'olam Vo'ed. It doesn't have to wait till the end. It could be any moment. Le'olam Vo'ed. It could be today. It could be tomorrow. If you bring it closer. So why should I waste my time telling you the deadline? You may never have to get to the deadline. If you use your powers, you'll be able to do it Le'olam Vo'ed forever. Anytime. Today, tomorrow, the next day, whatever. And therefore, we don't say Baruch Shem Kavod out loud. Because it's like saying, I want Mashiach to come right now or whatever. That's not maybe so nice to demand. Except once a year on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we see that potential so clearly that Klal Yisrael has, we can say Baruch Shem Kavod out loud. The rest of the year we whisper it as a fact. It could come tomorrow, the next day, whatever. We have that potential. Whether we can demand it, whether we can say we deserve and it's going to happen, it's a different story. But to say that it's there quietly, that we do. But Yom Kippur, we're able to say it out loud, because then we can say that Taka, if we would be like this all the time, like Yom Kippur, then Taka, Mashiach come tomorrow. We'll bring out that potential as quickly as possible. Okay, that is a... I knew this would take us a while. In any case, so I had about 6 or 7 other topics that I wanted to discuss from Vayechi. We will find other ways of getting to the topics in other sedras, but I thought this was important also to hear how to understand the bracha of Yaakov Avinu.